What is going on, everyone? Welcome to the Slaw Sports Show. I'm your host, Cole Noble, a.k.a. Slaw, and today we're joined by special guest Brad Kallier to do an NFL debate episode today. So we had a couple of mailbag suggestions coming in through Twitter and Instagram and just social media. So thank you for everyone who was able to submit some topic suggestions for us to the debate today. We got about 8 to go through in today's episode. So we got a long episode today. But hopefully we'll be able to pretty much hit on everything and get a little bit of some in-depth stuff as well. So again, we're just going to be sticking the NFL for today's episode. We put all the topics into a bag and we'll be pulling them out one at a time to discuss. And then when the conversation starts to die down, we'll move on to the next topic. But I'm excited for today's episode. I've tried to do something special since we missed last week's episode. So just trying to do something special for this week. And give you some good content to enjoy going forward into the week ahead. So let's go ahead and welcome Brad Kallier into the episode. So Brad, what's going on, man?
Thanks for having me. I always enjoy being on the Slaw Sports Show. Been a while, so I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we got the special guest fan favorite, Brad, back here on the show. And, you know, we haven't had a special guest in a while. Been a lot of me rambling back and forth, you know, with myself. So I'm happy to have someone, you know, here with me now to, you know, shoot some ideas back and forth and get some conversation brewing. So I appreciate you joining the episode today.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to it. We got some good topics coming. I'm sure we'll have a lot of really interesting takes. So it should be a good episode.
All right. So let's just go ahead. You know, right here, we got the mailbag. So we're going to pull out first topic of the episode here. Oh, and this one's a good one. Who wins the NFC East?
Oh, boy.
So we're going to jump right into it. The NFC Beast, in my opinion. Probably the worst division in NFL history that we've ever seen. So we got a neck-and-neck race between all four teams already here now into Week 13 with the Washington Football Team, the New York Giants, Philadelphia Eagles, and the Dallas Cowboys. So the first topic of the episode is who's going to win the division. Brad, let's hear your takes first. What do we got?
So, I think looking at it, this is pretty insane. That I think it really depends on how long Daniel Jones is out and Colt McCoy is playing quarterback for the New York Giants. Because if Jones is out for only a short period of time, I'm sticking with the Giants, who were my prediction before he got hurt. I do not think it's going to be the Eagles. I do not think it's going to be the Cowboys. I would not be too surprised if it's the Washington Football Team. But I think the New York Giants, they play very, very hard for Coach Joe Judge. They clearly, even though the talent there is lacking, they buy in to him as a coach and his staff. And they play very hard week to week. And that, frankly, has kept them in games and won them games. You know, I know Daniel Jones, when he's quarterback, he more or less only wins against the Washington Football Team. But if Daniel Jones is back after 1 or 2 weeks, I mean, they're going to lose this week regardless, I would say, to Seattle. But I'll say 85% chance the Giants, 15% chance the Washington Football Team.
Yeah, I'd agree. Just, you know, not saying Philadelphia or Dallas. Dallas is pretty much down the toilet bowl at this point. I talked about it a little bit in my article on my power rankings for week 13, but, you know, Dallas is pretty much a team who's already out of the running. They went downhill very quickly with that team. And then the Philadelphia Eagles, they're headed that direction with all, you know, the turmoil they're having on offense, which will be one of our other topics that we'll get into later. But Philadelphia is also headed down that stretch. And, you know, week 13 is like probably the toughest week for this entire division. Because you got Washington going up against Pittsburgh, who is still undefeated. New York, like you said, against Seattle. Philadelphia against Green Bay. And then Dallas against Baltimore. You know, depending on who ends up starting for Baltimore, it's still up in the air as well. But it's looking like Trace McSorley. But, I mean, against the Dallas Cowboys, McSorley might end up getting a win. His first one of his career. But then going through the rest of the season, it doesn't really pick up much better for the rest of the teams in this division. And then it turns out that last week is a full division week, week 17. So I crunched some numbers, just gave my little predictions here for the last little bit. And who I got coming out on top going into week 17, just with that divisional games in there in week 17. I got Washington, the Washington football team, leading the pack at 5-10 going into week 17. So, I mean, if that plays out and Washington wins that last game against Philadelphia, based on like my current projections, Washington gets in at 6-10 and hosts a playoff game.
I like the, and I've said this to you before, I like the skeleton of what the Washington football team is and what they're building. You know, very strong defensive front, good secondary that can get better. Offense needs work, but you have big-time playmakers in Terry McLaurin and the awesome rookie Antonio Gibson. So, need some help on the line and obviously a quarterback, but if they were to get in now, I think that would be a really big testament to just how good that defense is.
Yeah, and I think like their defensive line, like you just talked about, I think they have the best defensive line in football, and that's helping their secondary a lot, getting them a lot of turnovers. So it's going to win them some of these games against Carolina and, you know, maybe Seattle, who has struggled with some turnover issues, and then Philadelphia in week 17, three straight games where you're facing offenses with turnover issues already. That's just where I'm going with that for my predictions. And then offensively, you know, I think they can do enough. I think their offense has been looking a lot better, and yep, you know, Gibson's getting a lot more opportunities and a lot more reps, which I think he rightfully deserves. And then Alex Smith, he's looking a lot more comfortable now. Now he's had a couple games back in the lineup as the starter. I think his confidence will keep growing as they start getting closer and closer to the end of the year. But like you said, a lot depends on Daniel Jones as well with New York, and you know how well he stays out of it. But so you're going to take the New York Giants?
Yeah. Okay. I'll say the Giants, yeah.
All right, well, I'm going to go with the Washington football team, making it to become the Washington playoff team, hosting a home game in the playoffs is going to be my prediction. So we're now going to go to topic two, Brad. And topic two, who's the best running back in the National Football League?
Same as I would have said last year, even though he's been hurt this year, and that's Christian McCaffrey. I think it's very important to have a running back that is a big-time factor in the passing game, and there is no one who's as Christian McCaffrey, if he was a pure wide receiver, would be one of the best wide receivers in the league. And he's a great running back on top of that, just in terms of, you know, being a bell cow, running between the tackles, getting to the outside, in open space, all that. And I know there's a lot of great backs this year. I mean, Derrick Henry is a freak in nature. He is one of the most fun running backs I've ever watched. Nick Chubb, again, smaller version, but a big physical specimen, who's super athletic. Dalvin Cook's been healthy this year. He's a touchdown machine. Minnesota prides their offense through him, runs that offense through him. And Alvin Kamara, I think, is fantastic as well. There are a few guys who can be as strong of a factor both in the running game, rushing game, and in the passing game, like Kamara. But I just think it's McCaffrey, and I know he's been hurt this year, and I know he hasn't gotten a lot of time on the field, but I don't think that takes away the fact that this is a guy who more or less is the prototype of what you want a modern running back to be. And I'm not taking away anything from guys like Derrick Henry or Dalvin Cook or Nick Chubb, but I think when you can also be this elite level difference maker in the passing game as well, that takes you to another level. So I'm saying McCaffrey, even though I love me some Derrick Henry as well.
So when I look at this and I think of like who I think would be the best running back in the National Football League, there's a couple of facets you got to look at. I mean, you got to look at dependability, like within the offense, you know, how well they depend on this guy. You got to think of course, injury at the position, which, you know, running back is one of the most injury-prone positions in football because of, you know, the amount of touches and amount of, you know, times they have the football and amount of times they're getting hit, you know, even when they're not touching the football. And then you got to think of pure dominance, and then you got to think of, you know, again, just opportunity. You know, and like when I'm saying like opportunity, I'm thinking of guys like Alvin Kamara and Christian McCaffrey, who get more opportunities than a guy like Derrick Henry because of what they can do out of the backfield. But, you know, I'm leaning more so towards the injury side. And because of that, well, with injury side and pure dominance, I think Derrick Henry is the best running back in football. I mean, right now, you know, yes, there's been a lot of injuries at the running back position this year, but he's looking to repeat, and he's only missed two NFL games in his career, and that was in week 16 of 2019 last year and week 9 of 2016. So he's only missed two games to injury, and, you know, right now, the way he's just pretty much putting the entire Tennessee Titans on his back this season, he's won probably four games for him alone by himself pretty much, you know, like, what, two or three overtime games, he pretty much dominated the overtime. And then, you know, this last game against the Colts, they went into halftime. He had three touchdowns and 140 yards. So I think dominance and injury plays, you know, a bigger role, I would say, than pretty much opportunity when I think of the best running backs in the league. And then, you know, we talked about Dalvin Cook. Dalvin Cook's a dominant rusher as well, but he's missed five games of injury. He's had five NFL injuries. He's already been hurt five times in the NFL. And, you know, of course, got injured again this year, but, you know, luckily only missed one game this time. But Dalvin Cook could be that guy if he stayed healthy. Christian McCaffrey looked to be that guy until he was injured this year. So I think right now Derrick Henry is probably the best running back in the National Football League.
Yeah, and even looking at last year where they made that big playoff run, that playoff run was because of Derrick Henry. I know Arthur Smith is an incredible offensive coordinator and play caller, and Ryan Tannehill was frankly playing out of his mind last year statistically and how good he was. But this team and their success, more so than any other team in the league, in my opinion, is driven by the running back position. So in that sense, that would make Derrick Henry the most valuable running back in the league, for sure. You know, I just think, in terms of skill set, I would lean McCaffrey. But if you were to tell me, you know, who's the most valuable running back in the league in terms of just how important they are to their individual team success, I think the answer to that is probably Derrick Henry.
And, you know, seeing how good Derrick Henry was last year at the tail end of the season, into the playoffs, he stepped like right into that same stride in week one of this season and then continued it early in this season and is now getting even better as his season's progressed and gotten closer. And, you know, statistically, Derrick Henry comes alive in December. And we're about to see that this week's the first week of December in the National Football League. So if he's going to get even better, I mean, I think this guy's gotten better this year than last year. And last year, I mean, he got that massive contract in the offseason. And if he's getting even better right now, I think he's the guy. And, you know, history's shown that this guy can stay healthy. This guy can carry a whole team. This guy can carry, you know, 35 carries a game. And, you know, yeah, I'd like to see more out of the backfield work from Derrick Henry, but that's not what, you know, his makeup is. His makeup is getting the ball and just run it right down your throat. So just traditional running back, and just traditional, you know, side favors for me goes toward Derrick Henry. But I think Christian McCaffrey, if he ends up coming back later this season, and then, of course, next year fully healthy, I think he could come in and also challenge it. So good picks on that one
all around. Going back to the Titans, someone has got to hire Arthur Smith as their head coach. I think he's a star in the making right there. He's done such an incredible job with their offense.
Yeah, just, I mean, what they did running the ball and then how efficient they are passing as well. I think it's a good head coaching pull. Somebody could pull that out as well.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so we're going to go into our next topic here out of the mailbag. It's going to be one that Brad is going to like. What's going to be your dream general manager job if you're going to be a general manager wanting to come into the league next year? Is it going to be the Houston Texans or the Jacksonville Jaguars?
So this is interesting. You know, I think clearly of the GM jobs that are currently available, I would suspect that more will become available. You know, potentially Chicago, potentially Philadelphia. We shall see. But you look at it right now, Houston, Jacksonville, Atlanta, and Detroit, maybe Washington wants to hire one, so they technically don't have anyone with a GM title. But clearly the two best of those are Houston and Jacksonville. Yet at the same time, they're very, very different. So I think with the Houston one, what every front office and team looks for more than anything else, and the most valuable player prototype in all of sports, is a top five quarterback. With the Houston Texans, you immediately have that, and you have, say, quarterback on a long-term contract. You also have an elite level left tackle signed to a contract that significantly benefits the player based off of the leverage they had after Bill O'Brien did not extend him right away when they got him from Miami and Laremy Tunsil. You still have J.J. Watt on the defensive side of the ball. And I know their offense should, I mean, they should still have DeAndre Hopkins. But you have some decent playmakers there. Decent. But the offense, besides Deshaun Watson, is not good enough. And frankly, relies on Deshaun Watson to go crazy to win games. Their defense is not good enough. They're 11th worst in pass defense and 6th worst in rush defense based on DVOA. Their cap situation is very bad. And their draft pick cover in recent years, especially at the very top of the draft, has been really depleted. And this year, no first, no second. And again, you did not get correct value in trading DeAndre Hopkins. You know, you gave up a third for Gary and Conley. There's just a lot of value out of whack there. But again, the pros, an elite quarterback, an elite left tackle, J.J. Watt, you get to pick your own head coach. You're not in a very difficult division. And if you can hit in the mid-rounds of the draft, trade down, get a lot of young players in, make some good value moves, you could be a division contender and a very good team like they were last year in a year or two. Now, at Jacksonville, this is my selection here of these two. I just think Jacksonville is really cool because it's a blank slate start, right? You get to pick your head coach. You get to draft your franchise quarterback in this draft. You have an insane amount of excess draft capital. In 2021, you got 2 firsts, 2 seconds, 3rd, 2 fourths, 3 fifths, 2 sevenths, some extra draft capital in 2022. Shad Khan is a very patient owner. Cap space, they'll probably come out to around $75 to $80 million. And you look at young players in place, there's a lot of room to add here, but you got James Robinson, DJ Chark, Laviska Shenault, John Allen, C.J. Henderson, Juwan Taylor, Ben Barch, many other young players. Now, on the cons of that, they tend to have to overpay to bring in free agents, and I don't think you necessarily have a ton of 100% solidified young building blocks, but you really get to build your team in your image here with a hands-off, patient owner, and I think that's really attractive, so I would go with the Jacksonville Jaguars.
So I think another thing you got to consider here is how long of a contract you're actually going to be getting as the general manager. Because if you're getting like a short deal, like less than 5 years, and then you kind of just got to make something happen quick, it's not really going to happen with the Jacksonville Jaguars, which is, you know, a team currently in the middle of a tank. You're going to have to rebuild the roster, like you said, make it your team. So if you're getting like a short deal, you go with Houston, who, like you said, already has their elite players in place, add a couple there in the middle rounds, maybe bring in some free agents if you can create the money to even do so. But like you said, in a weak division, you can already start contending, you know, pretty much in your first season as a general manager. But if you get like a 10-year deal, like we've seen from general manager contracts in the past, the past couple of years, you would have to side with Jacksonville Jaguars. I mean, like you said, the cap room they have going in the next year is just insane. And you know, of course, a bulk of that, like you said, bringing in those high-profile free agents is going to cost you a lot of money compared to some other teams, but you have the money to do so. You got the picks to kind of build this roster the way you want to, and then, of course, you get to pick the franchise quarterback you want for this team, whether it's going to be, you know, with the most likely top three selection in this year's draft. You can go with one of the top quarterbacks there. You can get, you know, say Justin Fields, which is obviously looking like the most likely scenario in Jacksonville. So you get your guy to build your team with. But with Jacksonville as well, you know, yeah, they don't have the elite guys like Laremy Tunsil, J.J. Watt, and Deshaun Watson. But you kind of talked about some of the guys they do have. You know, James Robinson, who's been a beast this year and as an undrafted rookie.
Yep.
And then you got, you know, I would say your defensive edge is already intact. You got Clavon Chasen, and then you've got Josh Allen as well. And then C.J. Henderson, he's looking like a guy who can be your number one corner for the future. And then the receivers that are there as well, you got a pretty much already a skeleton of a roster already working in your favor. All you got to do is just fill in the pieces around those guys and then get your quarterback. And then, yeah, I said, you know, pretty much you're an instant contender with Houston. But even with Jacksonville, you're probably a 3-year contender with that, with what they already have in place if you play your cards the right way. and you have all the draft capital, all the cap capital to pretty much work that in your favor. So I'm probably going to go with you there and just say the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think that's a really favorable GM job and one of the more favorable ones we've seen in the last couple of years.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, even just looking away from the super young guys, I mean, Miles Jack is there, Joe Schobert is there. You know, there's Andrew. They're going to have some guys that they're going to have to make decisions on and whatnot moving forward. But I just look at what Jacksonville has, and I just think that, especially, I mean, look at Dave Caldwell, right? And Dave Caldwell, I'll give him credit. I think he did outside of the top of the drafts, where obviously they have notable misses in recent years, and you know we can see how much of an influence guys like Tom Coughlin were on those selections. But he did pretty well in the mid rounds of drafts. Dave Caldwell did in finding contributors and starting level players. Coming from a scouting background before, and even though he did, they did not have much success during his tenure. He lasted 7 years, 8 years. So if you're a GM who can come in here with Jacksonville and take advantage of all of this equity built up in all these different areas and make the playoffs a couple times, I mean, more or less, you're locking yourself into probably a 10-year gig in this role. And I think looking at it, too, I would be remiss if I don't mention Senior Vice President of Football Technology, Tony Khan. Shout out to All Elite Wrestling. I think it was very attentive, data-driven owner / senior executive there as well. So that's another interesting element. I just think there's a lot in favor of this job for Jacksonville. And then just looking past that with the two jobs available in Detroit and Atlanta, I think those jobs are more difficult. Looking at Detroit, they have a very, very specific roster built to fit that sort of Matt Patricia Patriots wannabe scheme. Their defense is a bit old and slow. It's just a very, very specific roster that's going to take time to turn over. And Atlanta, you're just in a very tough cap situation. So I don't think that those two are attractive to the level that the Jacksonville and Houston jobs are. And then if the ones to become available, Philadelphia, again, that's, we'll get into them later, but that one doesn't look too attractive right now. And Chicago, somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, and if I'm a, like, GM wanting to come in, you know, have, like, in a, you know, hypothetical scenario here, like we're talking about, you just have your choice of all the jobs that are open and which one you want to take. And then, you know, like you said, Detroit and Atlanta is also open. But if I'm a GM, I don't want to go in and already have, you know, a veteran quarterback in place, because with Matthew Stafford and Matt Ryan, I think you have an important decision day one of whether or not those guys are going to stay on the team, like whether or not you try to, you know, ship those guys out and the first, pretty much as your first move as a general manager, are you going to keep those guys for the future? You know, they're already, you know, starting to go down out of their prime. And then versus, you know, like Houston, you got Deshaun Watson in his prime. And then, of course, like we said with Jacksonville, you know, you have your pick at who you want at the helm at quarterback for your team. And just those two don't look desirable to me. You know, even looking past, you know, their cap set situations and how their roster makeup is and how the, you know, GMs of the their former GMs kind of work that as well. But I think quarterback is a huge thing you really got to focus on there. And, you know, getting a veteran guy that's already there and a guy you already have a question with day one is something that you don't really want to think about, especially being, you know, a new guy coming in as your first move.
And looking at Atlanta, you know, specifically I mentioned the cap thing, even if you wanted to move on for Matt Ryan, you really can't until 2022, because the dead money here for Matt Ryan and the loss of cap space you would incur through a cap penalty is really, really substantial. So it's not even feasible to get off of Matt Ryan's contract for two more years. And then Julio Jones is still a great wide receiver, but even if you wanted to say, all right, let's tear it down and build it up, you really can't do that with Julio Jones either until 2022, again, because of the dead money and cap involved. So, you know, Thomas Dimitroff built a winner there, but I think right now, you know, those guys are getting older and they're just in a very, very tough spot cap-wise.
Yeah, so it's pretty much a consensus there that we're both, you know, going to take this job in Jacksonville if we're a GM coming into this league. Very favorable spot, like we both said. So the consensus with that answer, Houston versus Jacksonville, we're going to take Jacksonville to be the new general manager. So we'll go back to the mailbag here for our next topic. Let's see what we get. So we got Justin Herbert versus Justin Jefferson. Who is your pick to win Offensive Rookie of the Year? Both guys having exceptional seasons. Both guys on track to break the rookie record at their respective position. Justin Herbert at 23 touchdowns. He's only four behind the record set by Baker Mayfield at 27 touchdowns for a rookie. And Justin Jefferson at 918 yards. He's on track to break the record of 1,377 set by Anquan Boldin. So both guys having exceptional rookie seasons and one that could be for the history books. But Brad, which one are you giving the award to?
So I'm going to go with Justin Herbert. And I am very happy to say that I was incredibly wrong on Justin Herbert as far as what he would be as a pro. He is already a top 10 quarterback in this league. He is big, athletic, has a huge, strong arm, very, very poised in the pocket, makes throws into tight windows, can really get the ball out there quick with strong accuracy and short and intermediate throws. And then you look at it statistically, top 10 in passing yards. You mentioned he's going to break the rookie quarterback record. Top 10, this is an interesting stat I love for NFL's next gen stats. Top 10 in completion percentage above expectation. 300 passing yards or more games, third most. Has the most passing touchdowns in the league of over 50 yards. Most passing yards under pressure. Only one interception targeting the end zone. And I quite frankly think, you know, this team has not done him favor, specifically last week, looking at the game management and time management and play calling. I thought the Chargers' play calling was very bad last week. You know, I frankly think that their head coaching job will become available once the season is over. But that's not a knock on Justin Jefferson at all. I loved him pre-draft. Clearly the Vikings did as well. If you saw the behind-the-scenes video when Rick Spielman's face lit up as the Eagles picked Jalen Reagor. But, I mean, Justin Jefferson, and you and I talked about this on this show, and I talked about it on my show. I looked at him, and I'm like, all right, this is the perfect safety blanket. He'll make big, crazy catches, short, intermediate throws. He'll catch a ton of balls, and he'll have a vertical element. That won't be a huge part of his game. He comes in here, and he's incredible. Down the field, tight windows, with – difficult to catch passes like he was in college, and being that safety blanket, he combines all of those things. He's outproducing Randy Moss through these 11 games, Randy Moss in 1998. Only the third rookie wide receiver in history with 50 catches and 900 receiving yards through 11 games. Second most receiving yards per route run of any wide receiver in the league, top 10 in the league in receiving yards, top five in average yards after catch above expectation. Not only is this the best rookie wide receiver so far, this is now one of the best wide receivers in the league. So it's just a testament to how good Justin Herbert is that I'm picking Herbert over Jefferson for the Offensive Rookie of the Year.
So I'm going to have to agree with you here and also take Justin Herbert as my Offensive Rookie of the Year. And, you know, we rerun the tape and we go back to the first start of Justin Herbert. The guy is going into the, you know, has a full week of practice. You know, he's going to be the backup week two against the Kansas City Chiefs. But then things go wrong right before the kickoff with Tyrod Taylor and, you know, the medical staff. You all know the story. But Herbert comes in and takes the defending champs to overtime. So, I mean, that game alone, when he just comes in, you know, not even preparing to start the game, not even really preparing to play, and takes the Kansas City Chiefs to overtime and only loses by three, I think it's a real testament of, you know, what they kind of already had. You know, they knew from that moment on they pretty much had their franchise guy, and he's improved, you know, week after week upon that game. And, you know, just Justin Herbert, you know, that game alone and, you know, the couple of weeks after that put him in this conversation. But when Joe Burrow went down with his torn ACL, I think that's really when Justin Herbert, you know, pretty much took this award, in my opinion, That's where, you know, he's still standing. And then again, no knock, like you said, on Justin Jefferson. He's had a phenomenal year. Like you said, already one of the best receivers in the NFL already in his rookie season from what he's already able to accomplish. But Justin Herbert, man, this guy has put his team in a position to win pretty much every game he has already played. Every game he started as the quarterback for the LA Chargers. And again, you know, just keeps getting screwed week after week pretty much by play calls. You know, whether it be his kicker, his defense, but he's put his team in position to win pretty much every game he's started. And he's looking like the guy who will be the long-term guy for the LA Chargers. And, you know, again, we saw just something I want to mention here is 2 years ago when Baker Mayfield set the rookie record with 27 touchdowns, he didn't get the award. They gave the award to Saquon Barkley. And again, you know, he had a tremendous rookie year as well. But, you know, you got to look outside of this record here we're talking about. And, you know, that's kind of where I'm about to slide over to Justin Jefferson. If he ends up taking this receiving yard record for a rookie from Anquan Boldin this year, I think you got to start looking at him a little more closely. But, you know, as it pans out right now, looking for the rest of the season, I think Justin Herbert, you know, continues to light people up, continues to throw this ball deep and, you know, getting the stats up. And if he wins, you know, two or three more games here the rest of the stretch, I think, you know, it's his award. And right now that's the way I'm kind of looking is I'm thinking that's going to pretty much happen here at the tail end of the season. And I'm just going to give the award here to Justin Herbert. But an interesting stat I want to throw out here, there's been 11 wide receivers who have been selected as the Offensive Rookie of the Year compared to only 9 quarterbacks. And then, you know, 2 quarterbacks in the last 4 years make up that 9, Dak Prescott and Kyler Murray from last season. So it kind of favors the wide receivers here. But I think Justin Herbert is going to be my Offensive Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, and you can't go wrong with either guy.
Yeah.
We can make that clear. They're both very, very deserving of this award. Very much so. I think it's interesting, too, just on the Justin Jefferson aspect, where, you know, obviously Stephon Diggs is fantastic and on a great value contract, but the Vikings more or less just swapped him out for Jefferson. Jefferson assumed that role very well and then added the 4th, 5th, and 6th as well. So I think both teams did very, very well in that trade, Buffalo, Minnesota, with Stephon Diggs and Justin Jefferson.
And then something else I also want to like kind of mention is that this week we will be seeing the return of Adam Thielen as well for the Minnesota Vikings. And, you know, Jefferson had a huge game last week without Thielen in the lineup as the number one receiver. But now, I mean, maybe it might get notched back down to wide receiver number 2 for the Vikings. You might see his targets go down a little bit here in the next couple of games with Thielen back in the lineup. That's just another like kind of, you know, nudge I had against him and, you know, siding with Herbert instead to get this award to.
Also, I got to shout out Justin Jefferson for hitting that giddy dance many times when he's scoring touchdowns or celebrating. That's awesome. Shout out to the giddy dance. Shout out to Justin Jefferson.
Yeah, the guy who really brought into the league. That, you know, he's really proud of bringing that dance. Let's go ahead now back to the mailbag here and bring out our next topic of the episode. Rolling through these pretty quick. So we got our next one. Who's your NFC favorite to go into the Super Bowl? So looking at it here, the top 3 in the NFC is going to be the New Orleans Saints and then the Seattle Seahawks and the Green Bay Packers neck and neck at 8-3. But the Saints are currently 9-2 and hold of that coveted first round bye as the number 1 seed. So, you know, of course, it will go back and forth depending on how these playoffs shake up. But looking at it right now, and, you know, we talked, this was a heavily talked about subject in the National Football League. And I think it was last week when the LA Rams beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, everyone hopped on them, said the LA Rams are the favorite. And then again, lost this past week to the San Francisco 49ers. So now no one's really talking about them as much. But the Saints, they're looking like a real favorite here for the NFC. But Brad, who's your team that you think is going to be the favorite to come out of the NFC?
This is really tough at this point. I think a couple weeks ago, I would have no hesitation, point blank, said it was Tampa Bay. But I think I really like Seattle, but Seattle has a propensity to do, you know, no Seattle Seahawks game is a normal game. And their defense is very, very concerning to me, especially their pass defense, very concerning to me. And I'm not sure that I can see them getting there with that defense. Green Bay, I think, is kind of the same thing on the defensive side. You know, I do not want to bet against Aaron Rodgers, but I don't feel super confident in them as well. Tampa Bay, in the last couple weeks, have taken that very strong confidence and withered it down. I do think that if Tampa Bay's defense can return to form, that's the best two-way team in the league or in the NFC as far as having a high-level offense and defense. And I do think that we're probably all overlooking just how good the Saints have been. I know Drew Brees did not get off to a good start. Obviously, he's hurt now. So I really don't think there's a clear-cut answer, and it's really tough. But I think even though their defense has been pretty poor in recent weeks, and offensively, Arians and Brady do not look to be totally in sync, if Tampa Bay can get it together, I do think that they would be my favorite. But right now, I'm really not that confident in any of these teams to be able to definitively say, you know, this is the team to beat, or this is clearly the best team. I think it's definitely a mix of Seattle, the Rams, the Packers, the Saints, and Tampa Bay. All five of those teams, I think, have the ability to go all the way to the Super Bowl. I really do.
Yeah, and with Tampa Bay, I mean, you talk about how great and how opportune it is to have a bye week. Their bye week in week 13 is probably the most opportune bye week out of anybody I've seen this year, except for probably the Bills, who just came off their bye, I think 2 weeks ago, I believe. And they had a really opportune bye, stayed at the number three seed, you know, got another, you know, step ahead on the Dolphins in their division. But the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they're a team who started looking like, you know, they had their big loss to the Saints and then lost again to the Chiefs. And then just the first half explosion by the Chiefs. And then, you know, Tampa Bay kind of started coming back in it. But there's been some issues there in-house with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And they have a great bye week this week to fix it before this team implodes, in my opinion. So if they can get things right on this bye week and start gaining some steam in weeks 14, 15, 16, and then, you know, maybe even 17, depending on where they stand going into week 17. But if they start getting some steam in here, you know, again, a team that we could add to this list. But, you know, Seattle, they're adding Josh Gordon to their offense. The thing we haven't, that you forgot to mention as well, that's going to be another dimension and another weapon for Russell Wilson on that offense. And, you know, they've been more balanced the last couple of weeks. You know, getting Chris Carson back might continue on that trend, you know, trying to take the ball pretty much away from Russell Wilson. He's had some issues here and there with his turnovers in the recent weeks. But if they can get things back rolling with Josh Gordon in the lineup and start letting Russ cook again, they can heat back up. But again, like you said, defense is an issue. And then, you know, my Green Bay Packers, you know, of course, I want to say they're a favorite, but you look at the only really game that they had where they can prove that they're, you know, a favorite for this NFC was that game against the Colts. And Rodgers proved offensively this team could probably be in contention to go to a Super Bowl. But then on defense, you know, they let the Colts back in it in the third quarter, let them back in it in the fourth quarter again, and then, of course, lost in overtime. So, again, you got another concern there on defense, no matter how good the offense is. Yeah, you say don't count out Aaron Rodgers. What if you get into a situation in the playoffs where the ball isn't in Aaron Rodgers' hands? You know, it's not up to him to win that game for you. It's up to that defense. And, you know, that's where I start seeing the concerns with them. But you look at the Saints. The Saints have it on offense. On defense, they have one of the best defenses in the National Football League. You know, they're holding teams, you know, I think it's the last four or five games, they've held teams to less than 12 or 13 points. They're shutting out offenses. You know, they haven't played the best offenses, but they played the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in primetime and held them to 3 points. And then on offense, yeah, they don't have Drew Brees, but they put up back-to-back 30-point games on offense with Taysom Hill. And then once you get back in the playoffs, you got Drew Brees back in the lineup. And then you start getting Alvin Kamara start rolling back in. You know, had a couple down weeks the last 2 weeks with Taysom Hill as the starting quarterback. We start inching Drew Brees back in. Then the stock starts going back up on Kamara. He has, you know, his best friend Michael Thomas back as well. You start getting that start trending up. And then you give him that first seed. You give him that first round bye. And then teams are coming into New Orleans to play these playoff games. And that's where I'm starting to lean towards the New Orleans Saints. You know, I had them going to the Super Bowl last year, and they bailed on me in the first game of the playoffs. But now I'm looking at them, and they're a team that, you know, could be a favorite for the Super Bowl. They could be a team that could end up sneaking in and getting a win this year in the Super Bowl. Because right now, the way they're starting to trend here in these next couple of weeks, yeah, the New Orleans Saints are looking pretty good, in my opinion. I think, I hate to say it, you know, I'm surrounded by all of these Packers memorabilia in my room, diehard cheesehead here, but I think the Saints might be the favorites coming out of the NFC.
With the Saints, my concern is, if you look back at, everything you said is true, but if you look back at some of their wins over the course of this year, the Bears, they beat in overtime, barely beat them. They barely beat the Panthers. They beat the Chargers in overtime. They only by 6 points, beat the Lions. Every game besides the Saints-Buccaneers game a couple weeks ago and last week's game against the Broncos has been a two-possession or less win. So I kind of look at it as their defense is very strong. Their offense is very strong. But I get concerned when you're letting teams like the Lions, or they lost to the Raiders, or the Chargers got very close to beating them. The Panthers got close to beating them. The Bears got close to beating them. You know, obviously then they come out, they destroy the Bucs, and they destroy the Broncos last week, and they destroy the Falcons. But those are teams that they should be handling pretty easily. And game to game, I do think that there is an element of inconsistency that I think we've seen over the course of this season as far as, you know, the need to score a lot of points to outscore these other teams. So if they can keep up what they've done in the last couple weeks, which, to be fair, they've done against bad teams like the Broncos and the Falcons, and unfortunately this year the 49ers, if they can do that against good competitive teams, which they have outside of that one Bucs game have not done so this year, then yeah, they probably would vault to the top of my list as far as the team I would predict to make it. But right now, I don't think I feel comfortable saying the Saints will be able to get there.
And I think two key games to pay attention to, and you talk about their inconsistency. You look way back earlier in the season where Green Bay came in and handily took them down pretty much in their own home. But then they go to Tampa Bay and hold them to 3 points. So, you know, they're two games against, you know, these contenders in the NFC. They've lost to the Packers. They destroyed the Buccaneers. So it's just going to be seeing like pretty much which team we're going to get coming to the playoffs. But I'm rolling with, you know, recency. You know, their defense has been trending the right way the last couple of weeks. They've looked a lot better here since that game you talked about, you know, against the Bears, where they had to take them to, the Bears took them to overtime. Ever since that game, this defense, in my opinion, has, you know, flipped the switch and, like I said, been one of the best in football since that game. And I think, you know, with the defense playing as well as they are, the offense is holding their ship. And then with Drew Brees coming back, that's just kind of like, you know, where I'm siding with things. But again, you know, it's still going to be which team we're going to get come playoff time. Because, you know, if the Saints play like they did against the Packers, like they did against the Bears, like they did against the Chargers, and Tampa Bay gets rolling, Seattle gets rolling on offense, you know, the Rams, you know, they could start getting rolling as well. And, you know, if they get down a Rams game with that defense, who knows if they can come back in that game as well. So, again, like you said, this is pretty much still a wide open race in the NFC, and there's no clear favorite. But I'm picking the Saints. You say no clear favorite, I'm picking the Saints to come out of the NFC to be your favorites. So just
if I had to pick one, like I really am really, I'll say Tampa. I think Tampa will put it back together, and I'll say Tampa. But I'm not that confident in it because, like I said, I think all five of those teams really have a chance.
Yeah.
Especially if Jared Goff can get back. If Jared Goff can get back to playing at a decent level, I think the Rams have a sneaky decent chance as well.
Yeah, and then they've lost a lot of tough games where, you know, like when Sean McVay gets outcoached, like we saw in that Dolphins game, like we saw last week against the 49ers, they can't do anything.
Nope.
And, you know, they get down in those games, and then you're not going to rely on Jared Goff to get you back in those games. And, you know, with some high-powered offenses like Tampa Bay, Seattle, New Orleans, and then, you know, the level of coaching of Bruce Arians, Sean Payton, Pete Carroll, you know, Matt LaFleur, they could potentially outcoach Sean McVay and put Jared Goff in a tough situation. That's just my only issue with the Rams. But you could also have Sean McVay outcoach them, and then the Rams look really, really good on both sides of the ball.
The Rams also have that inconsistency aspect to them as well.
Yeah. And then, you know, deep down, Brad, you know who my deep down pick is.
Yeah.
But I think the Saints, in my opinion, look really good right now. And that's just right now, if I had to pick a favorite, it would be the Saints. But deep down, I want to see that bad man Aaron Rodgers in the playoffs. See, and then if the Packers can get that number one seed and, you know, snatch that from the Saints, then you got a bye week, then you got home games at Lambeau in December, and then going into January. That's a tough atmosphere to play in playoff football, and, you know, something that Aaron Rodgers hasn't seen in a long time is home field advantage in the playoffs, especially in that NFC Championship game. So a lot of coin flips, a lot of toss-ups here in the NFC. We're going to go to our next topic now, and, you know, back to the mailbag. So we got, we're switching to the AFC side now. Who can challenge the Chiefs in the AFC? So we're pretty much just flipping to the other side of the NFL here. We just talked about the favorites for the NFC, but the favorite for the AFC is looking like the Chiefs. So who is going to be the team that will challenge them in the AFC? So what do you got, Brad?
So when you say challenge the Chiefs, I think the way you challenge the Chiefs is you have to be able to be a strong offensive team, because the Chiefs defense has shown it can be weak from time to time. So I frankly don't think there is a team, but if you look at the lay of the land, obviously you'd have to say, even though they're not the most impressive team at times and were not this past Wednesday, Steelers are 11-0. That's something that's impressive regardless of how it's done and whatnot. They have electric playmakers. They have a very good quarterback. They have a very strong defense. If that offense can keep playing at a high level, then of course the Steelers are the team that would best challenge the Chiefs, because they'd be able to put a lot of pressure on the Chiefs in taking advantage of the Chiefs' defense. So I think obviously you'd have to look at it as the Steelers. But at the same time, again, I'm not all that confident that the Steelers would be able to take it to the Chiefs. But that's really the only way, is you got to be a team with a strong offense that can really leverage the weakness of the Chiefs, which is the Chiefs' defense. You know, I look across the board, I love me the Browns. I really do. Their offense is not good enough, I think, to really, really challenge the Chiefs. The Titans, the Titans, if Arthur Smith can call himself a really good game, which he has shown the ability to do so, as I said before, he should be a head coach at this point. If the Titans can give the Chiefs a tough time with their offense, with Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill, then that's a sneaky option there as well. But I think you'd have to say the Steelers, and maybe you could formulate a potential for the Titans to be a tough matchup because of how good their offense is.
So when I look at a team that could challenge the Chiefs, I think that team has to do three things. And, you know, the last 2 years, we've only seen it once. And that was their only loss against the Las Vegas Raiders. But you got to do three things. First and foremost, you need a defense that can stop the Chiefs, which, being the best offense in football, is a hard task to do. And, you know, you're asking a lot out of your defense. Number two, you got to have an offense that can keep up, because you're not stopping. Let me rephrase that. You're not stopping the Chiefs. You're slowing them down. So you're still slowing them down. They're still scoring points. You got to have an offense that can keep up, that can keep you in that game. And then number three is, you know, ties in hand-to-hand with those two. We got to keep Patrick Mahomes on the sideline. If you can do those three things, you can beat the Chiefs. If you can't do one of those things, you're not beating the Chiefs. So you look at Pittsburgh. They have the defense to slow down the Chiefs. They have the offense to keep up with the Chiefs. But can they keep Patrick Mahomes on the sideline? I don't think that's the case. They're, you know, a team that drives pretty quickly. You know, they have quick drives here and there with Pittsburgh Steelers and then get into the end zone. And, you know, I don't think they're going to be able to keep Patrick Mahomes on the sideline. You know, they're going to get a couple turnovers here and there. But if you get Patrick Mahomes 8 or 9 drives, you know, those 2 turnovers aren't going to matter because he's still scoring on those other drives. You'll get the Tennessee Titans. They're a team who offensively, I think, can keep up, you know, if, like you said, if they're playing up to their potential, they're a team who could probably keep up with the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, like we saw in the AFC Championship last year between the Chiefs and the Titans are a team who can keep Mahomes on the sideline. They did really well at that in the first half and got away with it in the second half because they started to go down. And they started to go down because they don't have the defense to slow down the Chiefs. And they went down quickly. And then that was game over. The Chiefs went on to win the Super Bowl. And then another team that, you know, I just want to throw out there is the Indianapolis Colts. They're a team with their run style offense that they've kind of shifted into. They can keep control of the clock, keep control of the ball, and keep Mahomes on the sideline. And, you know, like that defense we saw slow down Aaron Rodgers in the second half, the Colts could probably slow down the Chiefs. And, you know, they have the defense to get them back into a game. But I don't know if they have the offense to get back into the game.
Yeah, I don't think they do.
So, in my opinion, it's a tough one, you know. And then you got some other teams you got to throw in there. Like you said, the Browns. You know, the Browns, I don't think they're at that level. The Buffalo Bills look really good this year, but still I don't think they're at that level to compete with the Chiefs. So, really, it's pretty much a two-way thing, in my opinion, between the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Tennessee Titans. And it's just the inconsistencies on offense for the Steelers. I don't think if that happens in that game, I don't think they'll be able to keep up with the Kansas City Chiefs. So if I had to pick someone that could challenge the Chiefs in the AFC, I'd have to say the Tennessee Titans. I think the biggest thing that you have to do is keep the ball from Patrick Mahomes, keep control of the game, keep control of the clock. And what better way to do so than with Derrick Henry, who could just pound the clock out. Pound first down, first down, first down, running the ball. It's just the issue you're going to lie into is that screen or the slant pass, excuse me, with A.J. Brown that he takes 80 yards of the house. The Chiefs will go wild, or excuse me, the Titans will go wild if that happens. But then you get the ball back into Patrick Mahomes and you put yourself back into another tough situation, especially if they get the ball, you know, start the second half, they score on that one. And then you have that big play touchdown. Patrick Mahomes goes down and scores again. So it's going to be really keen on, you know, if their defense can step up for the Tennessee Titans and, you know, try to slow this team down. But it's really going to come down to, you know, controlling that clock. But at the end of the day, I don't think it's possible. I think it's inevitable. I don't know if there is a team that could really challenge the Kansas City Chiefs right now.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think there's a team out there, but I think we're on the same wavelength with the Steelers and the Titans really being those two teams that, if it's possible, those would be the two teams that could do it.
All right, so we're back to the mailbag here. We got 2 more topics remaining. Let's go ahead here with this one. Back in the NFC East, focusing on the Philadelphia Eagles now, who should be the quarterback for the future for the Philadelphia Eagles? Would it be Carson Wentz or will it be Jalen Hurts, the second-round rookie that they selected in this past draft? Who should be the future quarterback for this team?
So I think looking at it, it's a very layered and complex situation. And it's not black and white between, you know, who's the better quarterback, who's the worst quarterback, whoever's better, we're going to play. It's not that simple. Whether the Eagles want it or not, the future of their team is Carson Wentz because he's still yet to begin his 4-year deal that has over $100 million guaranteed. They can't Now, if it was simply just based on play, then yes, they would have benched Carson Wentz by this point. That's pretty clear in how he's played and what he's shown this year. But they can't bench him because of that contract. That is, they're basically stuck with Carson Wentz until 2022 at this point. Because after this year, if he were to be cut, that would leave them with a staggering $77.87 million in dead money and a loss of $59.22 million in space. If cut after next year, that aforementioned $59.22 million would be the dead money with a loss of $24.547 million in space. Only after 2022, they'd be able to have some savings towards their cap of $6.727 million, albeit with $24 million in dead money, $24.547 million in dead money. So there's no avenue to get Carson Wentz off of this team without incurring an enormous amount of dead money and lost cap for another two seasons. So you can't bench a guy who has that major commitment coming to him because you need to at least give yourself the ability to attempt to get the most value out of someone that you're tied to. Because basically what happened here was the Eagles, you know, they've had an incredible, you know, these last few years. They won a Super Bowl. They did so by pushing a lot of their money out into this 2021-2022 area to maximize these last few years. And now they have an underperforming quarterback. Their team is ridden with a lot of holes, and frankly, they're way over the cap for next year. They'll get under with cut restructures, but the chicken's kind of coming to roost at this point. And then that kind of gets into the point of, with Jalen Hurts, you know you're stuck with Carson Wentz. Why pick him at 56? Or whatever pick it was. I forget the exact number. But I like Jalen Hurts. I did before the draft, and the way they use him as kind of a gadget player, they let him have one normal passing down last week. They're not getting anything out of him. And I understand you get a quarterback, it's the most valuable position. If you can get a good starting quarterback in the second round, that's a huge win. But you know that you can't go to him even in the short term, even if your quarterback is performing at a dismal level like Carson Wentz is. So I guess in a long way here, I'm basically saying they have no choice but to have it be Carson Wentz because they're just stuck. And, you know, I think eventually maybe they'll have no choice but to go to Jalen Hurts, but that's not going to come until the very end of the season or next year, in my opinion.
Yeah, and something I want to think about is, you know, saying hypothetically at the end of this year, Doug Peterson's gone, you know, the general manager's gone, they ice both those guys. The team owner, and we saw this, you know, before the game last week, he likes Jalen Hurts. And, you know, the general manager, if he stays, he likes Jalen Hurts. They drafted him for a reason. And, you know, they want to see him on the field more. And Doug Peterson's the guy who's not putting him on the field. He's the one calling the shots on offense. And, you know, he was expected to see more playing time last week. And again, we didn't see it against, you know, the Seahawks. Jalen Hurts has only seen the field 33 times this season. And, you know, from the general manager perspective, he drafted this guy in the second round. You know, he took a gamble on this guy. A guy, you know, a pick where he could have had Jeremy Chinn on defense. It could have been the difference maker on defense. But he went out and took Jalen Hurts because he liked him. And, you know, he went off their board to select Jalen Hurts. And you don't do that unless there's a reason. So a question I just want to ask, is it possible to restructure the contract with Carson Wentz?
Well, technically it is, but, you know, if you're restructuring, what you're doing when you're restructuring is you're more or less kicking the can down the road with a lot of the money. You're not going to be able to restructure it in a way where you can get off the contract sooner because there's no benefit to that for Carson Wentz. So technically, yes, but not in a way that would make it, you know, doable to get off this contract sooner.
So there's not a way to, like, restructure some of this money to where it kind of, you know, front loads it, so to say, more into next year. So that way after next year, you can move on to them. Because I think with the Eagles, somehow, some way, you got to bite the bullet, in my opinion. You know, you drafted Hurts for a reason. Hurts needs to start seeing the field more. Wentz has just been abysmal this year at quarterback. You know, 48 turnover worthy plays since 2019, leading the league. He's got the most off-target incompletions, the most interceptions. He's not your guy. And especially if you look at their division this year, the worst division in NFL history, as someone else at quarterback, you could probably win this division, and they're going downhill in it. So I think they have to bite the bullet and, you know, somehow, some way, whatever way they make it work. And yeah, you're going to take on a lot of dead cap if you cut and or trade Carson Wentz, you know, whether it be this year, whether it be the end of next year. But either way, I think you got to bite the bullet and go with Jalen Hurts here. But the good news is you're not paying him for a while. And it's something you got to remember because, you know, the quarterback is your big money deal when you think about cap space. But you still got, you know, 3, maybe even 4 years until you commit to Jalen Hurts and give him his contract. So sooner rather than later, I think you got to bite this bullet with Carson Wentz to see is Jalen Hurts going to be your guy. And you got to bite this bullet and, you know, try to work out some way to where, you know, it's kind of front loaded to where if you move on from him, you're paying for it now rather than later. Because I think you just got to bite the bullet with Carson Wentz.
But at the same time, we can say, okay, they'll take on this huge amount of dead money. They're already $65 million over the cap for next year.
Yeah, so you're going to have to you got to make some other moves with the roster and just kind of clear things up. But it's going to suck. It's going to suck for a year, maybe two, maybe three. But I think that's the way they have to roll with it now. And, you know,
I mean, not that they can't, you know, obviously they're going to cut Alshon Jeffrey.
Yeah.
Obviously they're going to cut DeSean Jackson. I mean, there's easy fixes here and restructures, but I think this just points to a larger picture where, you know, I do agree with you on the fact that they just kind of have to eat the contract at this point, not in the sense of getting rid of him, but in the sense of recognizing we got to see what Hurts has. It's a sunk cost. We paid Wentz all this money. We're stuck with him for 2 years, but that can't get in the way of the team's success. I don't think that's their mindset quite yet, but, you know, it's pretty crazy. They could have come out of this draft with Justin Jefferson and Jeremy Chinn.
Yeah.
And it's crazy.
And then that's kind of my reasoning for you got to go with Hurts because you took him for a reason. Literally said this guy was not on his board, on the draft board. Jalen Hurts was not, and they went off the board to select him when he fell into that second round. So they got him for a reason, and you know we just got to figure out and see like how they make this work, you know, with their, you know, again, quarterback controversy here in Philadelphia.
I will also say, just to a larger point with the Eagles, I think you look at this team, they are just stuck for a couple years at this point. Offensive line needs work. Wide receiver core, they drafted Jalen Reagor before Justin Jefferson and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside over D.K. Metcalf. They need work at wide receiver. I mentioned the offensive line. The linebacker core is bad. This is a team that's old, capped out, has a lot of holes, and I think they just need some sort of change. And I know Howie Roseman, he's a general manager, he's executive vice president, they're in this spot because of him, but he also did this with the idea that we're going to push it off to the future and maximize the window now to win, and they did. I think there needs to be some sort of change here, and I would not be surprised if Doug Peterson is gone after this season. I don't think Howie Roseman, the GM, will be gone. I think he'll still be there. But I think it's very, very possible that Doug Peterson is not their head coach next year. And frankly, if that's the case, I'm not so sure that this is that attractive of a head coaching job.
Yeah, you just got to figure out how to make things work, really, with Carson Wentz. And, you know, what Doug Peterson's failing at right now is his main guy on offense has to be Miles Sanders, a guy who's averaging close to 6 yards a carry. But he's not getting any carries, man. I mean, if you got someone else here as a head coach who could really maximize this offense, you know, fix things on defense, we probably wouldn't even be talking about this conversation right now between Wentz and Hurts if you were able to maximize things in favor of Carson Wentz. And I think the real issue for the Philadelphia Eagles lies with Doug Peterson as their head coach. And, I mean, Carson Wentz has been playing, you know, pretty awful as of late. But again, you know, a guy who got a 4-year massive contract, a guy who, you know, was in line for an MVP award, you know, maybe like not too long ago. So if you can figure out how to maximize his potential, you know, and I'm just saying, if as you're a new head coach coming in the next year, but if you're coming in as a GM, if that job, you know, like you said, you don't think it will happen, but you know, if a GM opening happens in Philadelphia, you got to think pretty much long term, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would say it's more so than just Doug Peterson. I just think this team is just not. I mean, we're looking at this wide receiver group. We're looking at Greg Ward and Travis Fulgham and Alshon Jeffrey, who's washed at this point, and Jalen Reagor, who hasn't been bad, but hasn't been anything special, and just not a good team at this point. Unfortunate as it is, they're just not a good team.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen in Philadelphia. Now, like I said, they're in for a tough road ahead these next two to 3 years, and city of Philadelphia is not going to be happy. You know, they're a happy city. You know, a short period of time ago, they were climbing, you know, street lamps, running through the city, celebrating. But you know, they're going to start calling for some heads, and you know, they already are right now. But it's going to be a rough road ahead for the city of Philadelphia, in my opinion, with you know, a situation that they put themselves into, in my opinion. So we're going to move forward now. We got one last topic in the mailbag, and this one here is looking to the future, looking into next year and looking ahead to April at the NFL draft. So the last topic for today's episode is how many quarterbacks will go in the top 10 of the NFL draft in April. So you think about last season, the top 10, we had three quarterbacks go. Joe Burrow, number one. We had Tua Tagovailoa get drafted by the Dolphins and Justin Herbert to the Chargers. And then you look at the current order, you know, of course, the 1 and 2 is the New York Jets and the Jacksonville Jaguars. Both teams, of course, need quarterbacks. But then you got the Cincinnati Bengals. They got their long-term guy this year in Joe Burrow. The Dallas Cowboys, they'll be getting Dak Prescott back. The L.A. Chargers, again, drafted their guy this year with Herbert. And then you got the Eagles, Panthers, Washington football team, Detroit Lions, and Atlanta Falcons rounding out the top 10. So the last topic of the day is how many quarterbacks will fall in that top 10 in the NFL draft?
So I'll say 4. Obviously, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Zach Wilson, and Trey Lance. I think you mentioned that order just now. You know, I know there's been some discussion in the last few days, but I think to me it should be, I mean, obviously Trevor Lawrence is going 1. I think it should be Justin Fields going number 2 to Jacksonville. I think that 1-2 should be pretty set in stone. But then you look past that, I think the Washington football team would be, I mean, they need a quarterback. They would be very interested in these 4 guys. Would the Lions move on from Matt Stafford and look quarterback? And then I think what's interesting with these top 10 teams, you have a lot of young teams that have their quarterback in place. The Bengals, Chargers, Eagles are not going to be picking a quarterback. Dallas, Dak Prescott, fitting we just talked about that. There's a lot of potential for these teams who are not quite in the top 10 to trade up and get a quarterback. The Chicago Bears need a quarterback. The Denver Broncos, I know you like Drew Lock. The Denver Broncos need a quarterback. The Patriots never trade up. They always trade down. I love trading down. But maybe the New England Patriots, since they're close to since they're close to that top 10, maybe they change their normal way of maneuvering in the draft, and they trade up for a quarterback. I think there's going to be a pretty strong market for teams to trade into this top 10 to get Zach Wilson or Trey Lance, should the top 2 be Lawrence and Fields. So I think we're pretty almost definitely looking at 4 quarterbacks in that top 10.
And then, you know, with trades and how that works out going into the top 10, you know, of course the quarterback needy teams will stay. And then, you know, probably the Bengals will say they'll probably get Penny Sewell. They need a, you know, a big offensive lineman to help out Joe Burrow. Obviously now, you know, before the season, that was obvious. It should be very obvious now what the Bengals need.
Yeah, they got to replace Bobby Hart at right tackle.
But then you got like the thing about the Cowboys, the Eagles, the Chargers, teams that could trade down is out of the top 10 and have some teams trade up to the top 10 to get their quarterbacks. You know, you talked about Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields, Zach Wilson and Trey Lance. But you also got two names you could also throw in there with Mac Jones out of Bama if he declares. And then you got Kyle Trask out of Florida, the two guys leading the Heisman race right now. We didn't even talk about. So I agree with you. I think the magic number is four. Four in the top 10. But in the top 15, we could see these other two guys fall very quickly and, you know, have a lot of quarterbacks actually come out of the draft here in the first round this April. But I think the magic number here is four. I agree with you. Trevor Lawrence, obviously, to the Jets. Justin Fields, obviously, looking right now to the Jaguars. And then, you know, just the two other quarterback needy teams. In my opinion, the Washington football team, yeah, Alex Smith looked good. It's a great fairy tale story. But, you know, you got to look at it this way. You know, the team's going to need a quarterback. They're young. Alex Smith's an older kind of a guy. He doesn't really fit the style of team that Ron Rivera is going to be trying to build for the future. So they're going to be looking at a quarterback. And the Carolina Panthers, I think, also in that same boat. Yeah, Teddy Bridgewater has looked great this year. But, you know, at the end of the day, I could see them also getting a quarterback. And then just two other teams I want to throw in here that are currently in the top 10. And, you know, we've kind of mentioned them a little bit here and there in today's episode. But the Detroit Lions and the Atlanta Falcons, I think, are two teams to watch for before the draft with Matt Ryan and Matthew Stafford. You know, depending on if they get an aggressive general manager in the house this offseason, they could ship those two guys out. You know, obviously Matthew Stafford would be a lot easier than Matt Ryan due to cap. But if we get an aggressive guy in-house in the front office and could see those two teams trade their quarterbacks, and then they could pick one that's their guy to be their franchise guy. But again, I think the magic number here is going to be four with Lawrence Fields, Zach Wilson, and Trey Lance at the current moment. So I'm agreeing with you, four in the top 10. In the draft come April.
Yeah, I think also just looking at that top 10 with the holes they have, I think the Eagles are just, obviously this draft order will change. But if we're looking at the draft order that's in place right now, the Eagles strike me as a very strong trade down candidate.
Yeah, of course. And then, I mean, that's where, like you said, you can see a team like maybe the Patriots come up, you know, and then again, yeah, the issue with, do they trust Cam Newton? Is Cam Newton going to be their guy? I'm leaning towards the no. I'm leaning towards the no of that. So they could be an unconventional team to come up here in the top 10 and, you know, could even have more than four quarterbacks come out of the top 10. But I think the magic number here, looking at this right now, is probably going to be four.
Yeah, I would agree.
All right, well, that's all the topics. The mailbag is empty. We've checked all the mail. So we have no more topics to discuss. A long episode today. Huge thanks to Brad Kalir for sitting down and talking some football with me. Always love to have our salary cap guru, you know, future general manager in the making here. Talking a lot of general manager stuff. Shout out to Brad Kalir. This is the guy who we could see his name start popping up here. I don't know. Favorite C says, I throw Brad's name in the hat here. But again, you know, all fun and games.
I'll be a lot cheaper.
Yeah, a lot cheaper option for Brad. He's not going to be demanding his multi-million-dollar contracts. He'll take a couple hundred thousand, be happy with that. But again, thank you for joining, Brad. Always great to have you on the show. Fan favorite. But again, thanks for joining the show. Busy man. Glad you had time to take out of your schedule to join today's episode. We talked about a lot. I had fun.
I love being on the show. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Check out Brad's podcast, After the Final Whistle. He's been a little dry here as of late. Hopefully we see some little, we'll start nudging him some more to have a couple more episodes come out. But he's always, always active on Twitter. Follow him on there as well. But again, thank you for joining and listening to today's episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Back to the normal groove now here with the holidays, the Thanksgiving back over. We're back here doing some more episodes. So hopefully to keep things more consistent here for you guys. So again, thank you for joining. Check us out on Twitter, Power Rankings every Tuesday, unless, of course, we have a Wednesday game hit us like we did this week. But check out all the good content we got coming out here at the Slaw Sports Show. So, again, thank you for joining and listening to today's episode. And until next time, peace. We'll see you next Saturday. Have a great week, everybody.